Coming in hot, 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 Lisa shares her financial tips and strategies to build wealth, have fun with finances, and be debt-free without having a restrictive budget. From bankrupt to millionaire, Lisa knows what it's like to feel as if you're living paycheck to paycheck. Her unconventional money multiplier system is the very wealth protocol that enabled her to retire 2.5 years early, pay down $100,000 of debt in 6 months, and move to her dream home at the beach. Hey, hey, welcome back to this episode of I Date Money. I'm your hostess, Lisa Drennan, your wealth activator. And today we are hanging out with Amber. She is an attorney, author, speaker, success architect, and podcaster. She is the owner and attorney at Ferrum Law in Las Vegas, Nevada. She practices criminal defense and immigration law. She graduated from law school in Michigan and immediately moved to Vegas, where anytime you go to Vegas, whatever happens there stays there, right?
Except felonies. They follow you home.
Yeah. Who follows you home?
Felonies. But I tell my clients all the time, like, don't lose your mind when you're here because bad decisions follow you home.
I know. My husband and his cousin went to Vegas, you know, back in the 90s, mid-90s, I think it was. And I get a phone call. Danny got arrested. I'm like, what? What do you mean? Like, what happened? And they were in some casino. They got drunk and he got into a fight. Right. And then he got thrown in jail.
And yeah, we laugh about it as attorneys all the time. And we're like, some of the smartest people that I've ever met do the dumbest shit when they come to Vegas.
Yeah. Now, I went to Vegas in Halloween weekend, 2014, I think it was, 15. And I just enjoyed the beautiful landmarks, the casinos, the artwork, and like the Wynn Casino. Yeah. You know, we saw a few shows and like the casinos were fun, but I'm not much of a gambler and we're very well behaved. So it's an interesting, fun place. So why Vegas? I mean, Michigan to Vegas.
I mean, I wish that I had a well thought out answer for you, but there's always a boy and they always cause problems. So I grew up in Idaho. I grew up in Southern Idaho. And when I went to law school, I wanted to get as far away from my hometown as possible. So I thought I was going to go from Idaho to Boston. I went to law school in Michigan. And so to me, Michigan was just the stop to go further east. Well, the 3 years that I had away from my family was enough for me to realize that I didn't want to go further east. I wanted to come back closer to my family. So I didn't want to go to Idaho, didn't want to go to Utah. I was dating a guy from Vegas at the time. And so Vegas won.
Ah, great investment, right?
Right. It really was. I don't regret it at all. It was, you know, my career has been amazing here. And it feels like home. Like any new place, it's got a learning curve. And Vegas was hard because it's so transient. So finding those senses of community was really difficult in the beginning. And I'm really glad with the choice of place that I live. There's no snow usually.
Yeah. A little cold today, but
yeah, a little chilly.
Yeah. Well, and it's nice to have that constant flux of, you know, multiple income streams coming in through, you know, being the attorney, like you always have clients, but then you're also a success architect. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I started to really struggle with the idea of success when I was at the pinnacle of my legal career. I had hit what I thought was everything that I wanted. I was making six figures a year. I had this law degree. I had this prestigious career that people respect you for. And there was a part of me that thought that all of the internal stuff, the internal work that I didn't want to do, that it wasn't going to matter anymore when I had the outer success. And so at the top of my legal career where I have the outer success and I still feel all of the stuff on the inside, I started struggling with that. And through opening my own business and wanting to get better at sales, I ended up really diving into mindset. And I went to be a better salesperson and a better business owner. And I started to realize that like I was more peaceful on the inside. My relationships with my family were getting better. I felt more, validated and worthy about just who I was. I started to create an identity that was outside of just practicing law and realize the value that I hold outside of my career. And the more I did that, the more people noticed. And so people would start reaching out to me and say, what are you doing different? And I started to realize that there's this whole sector of the population, which is a lot of it, that has tied their identity, their value, their worth to something external to themselves. And they've tied their success to that. So maybe it's the stay-at-home mom that becomes an empty nester that now struggles with who she is because everything that she's poured her heart and soul into is gone. Maybe it's the career-oriented person like myself that focuses on your career, and then you go higher and higher and higher up that ladder and nothing changes. And so I started to realize as I opened my eyes and looked at the world around me that people needed to have more conversations about success and what it meant on an internal and individual basis rather than a societal and an external basis. And so that's kind of where it started.
I love that. And it's so important because, you know, people go through different stages. And I was actually just talking about this very thing with my client before our call. We were talking about like that need to have harmony in our homes, harmony in our hearts. And when you think about it, it starts with us. Like the mom is the pillar, right? And, you know, it sets the tone. Our energy kind of goes out into the home life and people respond to us. So we're in a bad mood. Everyone's in a bad mood.
Yeah, I mean, it's so true. And that goes for anything, right? Like when I started going down this journey and this path, like I was all, I mean, I'm an attorney. Everything had to have evidence-based and scientific-based and like the law of attraction and energy and manifestation, like that just was not vibing with me because you couldn't show it to me, right? And then the more experiences that I had, this unexplainable difference started showing up. And we've all felt it where you're in a room, maybe it's a networking event, maybe it's a, you know, meeting for your kid's school, whatever it is. And all of a sudden, like the energy just changes. Like somebody walks in and either sucks all the energy out of the room or completely invigorates the room with energy. And like, we've seen that person that walks in and you're like, I don't know what it is about her, but everybody's looking, or him, everybody's looking. Right. And so energetically, there's been studies that have established that we walk into a room sometimes a full second before we actually walk into a room energetically. So it's so important to make sure that we're keeping that where we want it to be.
Yeah. And it's amazing how we can quickly transition too, because I know, you know, we call it our happy face. Like, oh, we're going to this event and we just had an argument in the car, but we need to put our happy face on.
Yes.
Because we want to make a good impression.
Yeah. And I have a love-hate relationship with that, because you're sitting there thinking, okay, I've got to pretend to be okay. But nobody believes it, right? Like there's always that energetic disconnect. And sometimes, you know, we've got to put on the smile. You can't walk in like a complete blubbering mess, but sometimes the easiest way to go through that is to meet somebody and be like, how are you? When they say, how are you doing? Be honest and be like, I'm actually really struggling today. And I'm glad that I'm here because I need some interaction.
Yeah. Could you imagine if people actually did that?
Yeah.
They actually did that. That would be completely different. So you know, we talk about money as energy. I mean, like it's called currency. So, you know, we know that money is energy. And we think about the reciprocal energy of money, of giving and receiving. What is one way? I mean, you're transitioning, you know, or you're added this cool success architect type of thing to this attorney mind. So you're taking the logic with the woo-woo, I guess, right?
Yeah.
And kind of blending it in. How has this helped you become successful with money, with partnering with money and seeing money as this energy where you can just kind of unite these two worlds and create a beautiful ROI for yourself?
Yeah. So I'll tell you, it was actually a double-edged sword, because I grew up with no conscious relationship with money. And I say that because we all have a relationship with money at an unconscious level, whether we want to acknowledge it or not. My parents never talked about money. And they didn't talk about it because they struggled with it. And like all parents, they wanted to protect their kids from the same struggles that they had. But what we don't realize is that our little, you know, 6, 7, 8, 10-year-old brains, they pick up on everything. And so you just know, right? I didn't know the details, but the way that they handled money and the things that I saw created the relationship I had as an adult. So I grew up a lot in this scarcity mindset of not believing there was going to be enough, and we never wanted for anything, but we just never felt like when it came to money, we never talked about it. It was never something you were supposed to have, right? So I say that because I don't want to make it sound like I was homeless when I was a kid. But then when I realized, the phrase money is just an exchange of energy changed the way that I look at money. The problem is it didn't change the way that I manage it. And so I got this belief and started to understand that you can attract money into your life with the right energetic intentions, that money really is just an exchange of energy, that you put energy out into the world and energy comes back. And when that energy is valuable, people pay you for it. And I spent it a lot. And so for me, sometimes I feel like I still struggle with that, with believing and knowing that I will always be able to make enough money to support myself, which minimizes in my mind often the need to manage it, because I don't believe that there is, I believe there's an abundance of it. I don't believe there's a scarcity of it. And so I think that it's this double-edged sword of knowing and believing that you'll always have enough because money is energy, and respecting it enough to make sure that you learn how to manage it, which is the path that I'm on now, if I'm completely honest.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing that. And it is so important to recognize that, because as with any relationship, there's it ebbs and flows. There's ups and downs, there's good days, bad days. There's days where you give the silent treatment to money, and just like you would to a partner. Like, we're not talking right now. I need my space. And there's, especially after the holidays, recording this January 16th of 2024, for those of you listening in the future, we're just coming off the holidays and people are getting the bills, they're getting the credit card statements, and they're like, what? Why did I spend this much money? And then all of a sudden they go into these hissy fits, like, this is ridiculous. I'm going to cut back next year. I'm going to do this. And these are people who have money. They're wealthy people. It's not people who are like struggling to make ends meet, because it doesn't really matter. Like, the working in this field since 1987, I've seen the same thing over and over again. Regardless of how much money people have coming in, they always fear that there's not going to be enough. And so when they go on these binges, like with the money, like, oh, we're going to have fun, we're going to go on holiday, it's like they don't really plan on this stuff, right? And then all of a sudden the bill comes in, and they're like, oh, that's way more than I thought it was going to be. Oh, crap. And maybe they have to go into their savings, or and maybe they have to work more, whatever. But there's this story that we tell ourselves. And I know for me, I used to tell my story. My story is, there's never enough, and no, you can't have that. So I grew up with a family of entrepreneurs, and I was told no all the time. My parents were divorced and they had a business together. So my mom, single mom, four kids, had to start her business all over again. And every single time I wanted something, mom, can I get a pair of Jordache jeans? Go ask your father. Dad, no. And it was always no. And I used to get so angry. So when I hear no now, my automatic response is, I'll show you. I'll just go get it myself. So I was very successful in my career, always carried two or three jobs so that I can tell myself yes. But I remember my 13-year-old self stomping her foot down and saying, when I have kids, I'm never telling them no if they want a pair of Jordache jeans.
And then here we
Getting
are.
up. So what kind of stories have surfaced for you in this journey? If you
Yeah, I love this question so much because this is where I live as a success architect. So for people who are unfamiliar, the scientific certifications that I have is called neuro-linguistics programming, NLP, and it's based on the way that we see the world, the success, how our brain is programmed, not from a physical standpoint, from an emotional and psychological one. And it was created by two psychologists that got tired of seeing talk therapy not release problems year after year after year after year. And I want to make clear that I've been in therapy and I've done NLP, and I think that there's a place for both of them. So I'm not trashing talk therapy at all. I think that it's necessary. I say that only to say that the stories that we tell ourselves are tied to the way that our mind was programmed when we were a kid. And what sociologists have believed is that 0 to 8 years old are the most important programming times when it comes to our values and our relationship with things like money. So for me, I never, let me go back even more. I grew up in a very religious town. And in a town where money was either something you had or something that you coveted. So there are still times, and I love my mom to death. There are still times where I'll be with my mom and she'll see somebody that has something that she sees as extravagant. And the first place that she goes is, why in the hell would anybody need that? And some of it's really extravagant. And that's not the point. And so there's a part of me that the story was when I could afford stuff. So first of all, it was, I can't afford it. I'm never going to have enough money. I'm always going to be in debt. So why should I care about it? I've worked really hard over the last 10 years to pull myself out of the debt that I put myself in my 20s and 30s because I didn't see a point in keeping my credit good. I didn't see a point in saving because I was never going to have enough money anyway. So I should spend it while I have it because I never know when it's going to run out and I want to enjoy it. Right. And then as I shifted from that, I started to tell myself the story that money was something we were never able to talk about. And so money is something that you shouldn't have. It doesn't have any value, so you should spend it. So then it went from, I know I can make it, to I don't think that I should keep it. So what am I going to spend it on? And recently I've realized that I've just implemented some systems to create a speed bump between my impulse and my debit card. Because recently what I've realized is that I get more value out of spending the money than I do in using the thing that I spend it on. Because I grew up in a time where I didn't think that I would ever have enough. The dopamine hit that I get from buying things is from having enough money to buy it. I'll have Amazon packages that I don't. I mean, I just opened Amazon packages that I bought probably 6, 7, 8 months ago, and they weren't open. They were sitting by my front door. I couldn't possibly have needed what was in those packages if they sat there for 8 months unopened. Sometimes, if my debit card's expired, that's linked to my Apple Pay, that's enough for me to be like, oh, I don't actually want this. I just wanted to know that I could buy it. So, there's a lot that goes on in our brains when it comes to our relationship to money. And it comes from the most innocuous things that we don't even think about as a kid, that our parents were doing good jobs and we just programmed our brain in a way that created whatever results we have as an adult.
That's so important to know because our thoughts are the most powerful tool that we have. And we think about the conditioning things that we observed. I mean, like you said, most of us weren't taught anything about finances. We caught it basically. And the worldview, our home view, you know, the religious views, all the things that influenced us to help us as adults say, this is what I know and trust and believe about money. And, you know, one of the things I have a membership called Profit Goldmine. And one of the things that we do is we look at our thoughts and our beliefs and we like write down the thoughts about our money. And it's just like, do I really believe that to be true? And why? Where did it come from? Is it my belief or is it something that was instilled on me? You know, because I always like to, I call it the generational curse. It's probably not a great way to describe it.
I
But
think it's pretty accurate.
our ancestors teach us these things. And I look and I'm like, and then you marry the families together. Like, you know, your mom is raised one way, your dad's raised another. And then they come and they blend that together. And I think about, oh my goodness. And you do see, like, you know, you see the different levels of, you know, poor people believe that they don't have the same opportunities as rich people. But mo all rich people were poor at one time. You know, I just think about that. Like, if you know their stories, you can see how they've grown and they've overcome. They decided to put it, because whatever we make a decision to do, we get to do it. Because we can't argue with that. So I've heard about NLP. I've had a few guests that are proficient in it, I guess is the right word. Tell us, what is it, what tool do you use to help tap into that money story so that you can rewire your brain to respond differently?
So I'm going to give you the attorney answer. It depends, right?
Okay.
There's a lot of different modality options that are available depending on where my client is at. This is where I needed to work myself up to the woo-woo. So for anybody that's listening, that's very analytical like me, please bear with me. I want to talk really quickly before I answer your question, because it ties into it, about what you said about the generational curse. Biologically, if we think about it this way, women are born with all of the eggs that they'll ever have in their life, right? So if we believe that there's a mind-body connection, and we believe that your thoughts are important and can drive your beliefs and program you, and that there can be like this DNA connection, then you could go back as far as two generations of people that you've never met, because your grandma, if your grandma lived through the Great Depression, and she had your mom in that time frame, and your mom had your eggs in her at that time frame, biologically, if you believe there's a mind-body connection, you could be programmed with the money relationships from the Great Depression. And I say this because one of the things that we use is something called timeline techniques, where I ask somebody when their first negative relationship or negative emotion around money is. And this is where people try to logic their way out of it. They'll get an emotion, or they'll get a feeling or a memory, and they'll be like, but that just doesn't make sense. Well, it's not going to make sense. You're not going to understand it. When we say it logically, it's so weird and non-analytical to think that we could actually feel or think that way about money. And let me give you an example. This isn't money related. One of the first clients that I worked with, we were dealing with anger. And I asked her when the first time that she experienced anger was, and she told me that it was 7 years ago, or seven generations ago on a pirate ship. Or seven lifetimes ago on a pirate ship. And I remember looking at my trainer at the time, and I was like, this is bullshit. And she says, does it matter? And I said, yes, it matters. Like, I'm an attorney. It matters. And she says, if she believes it's real, it's dictating every decision that she makes. Whether you believe it's real doesn't matter. So when we get that feeling that says, the first time that I had this negative relationship with money was two generations ago, but I don't believe in past lifetimes. So how could, I'm sorry, two lifetimes ago, but I don't believe in past lifetimes. So how could it have been two lifetimes ago? Logically, you may not, but unconsciously, your unconscious mind clearly believes in past lifetimes, or else you would not have been able to come up with that answer. So a lot of times we'll have people go back and figure out unconsciously, with the very first things that come to your mind, what was your first relationship with money? What were the emotions that were around that? A lot of times we hear anger, fear, and guilt when it comes to the emotions. Sometimes it's sadness from not being able to have enough. A lot of anger, fear, and guilt surround money. When we start to acknowledge that the stories that we've told ourselves about those relationships with money and those emotions are complete stories, and that we get to rewrite the script on those, then we can create a different relationship with money. Also, something hit me while we were talking, and this is kind of how simple it is, because we're onions. We can find something that we value, and that can be something that is positive or something that's negative. I left a very, what I consider, controlling religion when I was a kid. And that religion was very big on tithing and giving back to the church. And if I make money, then God is going to judge me if I don't give money to the church. So what's the best way for me to avoid that? It's to stay broke all the time. Because if I don't have extra money to give, then I'm not going to be able to be judged for not giving any to the church that I don't believe in. And so it's as simple as something like that, where you may say, I don't want to support this thing, but I've been told my entire life I need to support this thing if I have money. So I'm just going to make sure that I never have money.
Interesting. Yeah, and it's amazing how we can work through that thought process and come to our own conclusion and decide, yeah, well, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
And there's always a different way. There's always a different perspective that we can look at it and say, okay, well, if I want to support this church, or if I want to give back, you know, I'm all about giving. Yeah. It's a reciprocal energy, giving and receiving. So I love supporting good causes and all of that. Yeah. So when you think about it, like, oh, I get to support this cause, you know, and define the church are the people. So, and I know religion plays a lot of it. I mean, I grew up Catholic. So, money is the root of all evil. Well, no, it's the love of money that's the root of all evil. And I date money. So, does that mean
Yeah.
I'm bad because, I'm a bad Christian because I love money? No, it's just the perspective. And I'm reading this book. I interviewed James I. Bond on the show a few weeks ago, and he wrote this book called Brain Glue. And so I, got it and I'm reading it. And it was so funny how, the power of our brain, of our thoughts, and how we remember things. And he had described in the first chapter of his book about the Head and Shoulders commercial. They haven't had one in 25 years, but people still remember it because when they, 60 years ago, when they created the ad, people were learning the song Head, Shoulders, Knees, and Toes. And so it reminds you, it sticks into your mind that way. And when you think about the different perspectives we have, like, okay, do I really believe this to be true? Like, where does this belief come from? And how, what do I truly believe in getting back to the root? You had said earlier how the first 8 years are transformational for our core values and our belief system. And I think about my first 8 years, and it was a hot mess. I don't even think I had a childhood. I was exposed to things no one should be exposed to at that age. And I think about, like, there's a lot of taken advantage of and being stolen from, especially within the family. Like, if family borrowed money, don't expect to get paid back because you're family. So then why are you using the term borrowing, right?
Just give it to them.
Right, exactly. Just
But we
here.
can't do that because then we're enabling them and we won't enable them. And we want
Yeah.
this guilt to be hanging over their head that they got to pay us back, but we're never going to get it. Yeah, I've been there.
But really spending the time and working through this process is so important to be able to do what we say we want to do. Now, like, wealth means things to different people. When I define wealth, it to me it's a beach house. To some of my clients, it's a farmhouse, it's a tiny house. It's just being secure, just having a home to go to, right? It doesn't matter what the home looks like, it's just a safe place for them to be. For some, wealth means having multi-million dollars in the bank. How do you define wealth?
Ooh, that's a good question. For me, wealth is abundance and not in a way of having. To me, wealth is abundance. It's being fulfilled, being satisfied, not just my needs met, but actually satisfied with where I'm at, and having the resources to be able to help others in the same way that I could have in the past. So it's the having enough for me to be truly, to truly live the life that I want to live and having extra to be able to give back to those who can't.
I love that. That's a beautiful definition. So, what's the best money advice that you've ever received?
You guys aren't going to like it. The best money advice I've ever received is to talk about it. We often were raised that you don't talk about money, politics, or religion in public circles. Well, whenever you're told you can't talk about something, what's the first thing that you think? You think shame. You think I'm going to get judged because of this. You think this thing must be bad because I'm not allowed to talk about it. Nobody's ever said, don't talk about a good thing, right? Unless they're talking about bragging. And then that creates a whole nother scenario of people who are afraid to share their accomplishments. So it's a whole nother episode. If we believe that money is not worth talking about, we are programming our unconscious mind to believe that we shouldn't have it. And as non-logical as it sounds, if your unconscious mind does not think that you should have money, it will find a way to get rid of it every single time that it comes into your hands. So they make two, three, four, $5 million a year and not have anything in savings because you've been told your entire life not to talk about money, which causes your unconscious mind to ask yourself, what's wrong with it? So talk about it. Start to be willing to have conversations about it. You'll start to realize that the people that are living the life that you want to live when it comes to their relationship with money are people who are willing to talk about it.
Yeah. Beautiful. I love that. What great advice for those of you listening out there. Talk about money. This is what dating money is all about. And go find your money partner at idatemoney.com. Choose who you want to connect with and find out a little bit about yourself of what money personalities you have inside of you that are dictating how you are connecting with money, how you're partnering with money. Thank you so much for being here and for hanging out with us and sharing your money story. Amber, what's the best way for our audience to connect with you?
Thank you so much for having me. First of all, it's been so much fun. The best way to connect with me is to probably go to the website, which is successdevelopmentsolutions.com. From there, they can access the podcast. They can get information on the book. They can find the Facebook group, all of the good things.
Beautiful. For those of you listening, check the show notes. Connect with Amber and her expertise in tapping in, using NLP to tap into your story, whether it be with your money, relationships, whatever it is that you have got going on. And remember, it doesn't matter how much money you have, it's what you do with it.
Hey, 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 thanks for tuning into the show. Give us a 5-star review and share it with your friends. Get ready to activate wealth. Be the next millionaire with a simple adjustment of your finances using an energetically aligned money multiplier system. You get to build wealth by partnering with money. It's time to have fun with finances. Pick a date. The link is in the show notes to book your wealth activation call where you will get the one solution to multiply your money. Remember, it doesn't matter how much money you make, it's what you do with it.